You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News, Coastal First Nations, Gagatla, Lakwalams, and Matlakatla First Nations all now have reiterated their opposition to any oil pipeline and port development on BC's north and central coast after Alberta's Premier Daniel Smith announced plans to seek a new project proposal earlier this month. Today, we speak with Christine Smith-Martin, the CEO for Coastal First Nations, about why the CFN says oil on the north and central coast will never be acceptable. Stay with us.
My name is Christine Smith-Martin. My Haida name is Hatjela. I come from the Yaklanif clan of Haida Gwaii, and I am currently the CEO of an organization called Coastal First Nations Great Bear Initiative.
Great, Christine. Thanks so much for being with us here on CICK News. We're chatting here today because of a statement that was put out by the Coastal First Nations about a week or so ago in response to Alberta Premier Daniel Smith talking about pushing through a project proposal around a new oil pipeline and tanker facility that would go through the north coast of British Columbia. Maybe firstly tell me what was the Coastal First Nation response to Premier Smith's proposal for an oil pipeline and oil tanker export facility on the north coast of British Columbia?
Well, I was a little bit shocked that we were even talking about this. You know, quite some time ago, we had a quite extensive consultation. The federal government came in to talk about the oil tanker ban and did some hearings along the coast and got some great feedback from everybody. And I think it was very clear at that time that this was not something that anyone along the coast really wanted to have in within our communities or by traveling through our waters. This tanker ban is not a new tanker ban. It's been around for about 50 plus years. So it was quite shocking to hear that they were even having conversations about this tanker, lifting this tanker ban within our territories.
Yeah, you're referring to the Tanker Moratorium Act, Bill C-48, which was brought in a number of years after the Northern Gateway pipeline. But the Coastal First Nations have had their own exclusion zone, their own tanker ban moratorium for a number of years prior to when C-48 came into play. So maybe tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, that was a little bit before my time, but what I've been told is that, you know, it was a decision that was made. And I think the reason that it was made is, if you can imagine the North Coast and all the ecological treasures that we have along the North Coast, it was really apparent that there was no room for oil coming through our coast. It was really important to our communities. And, you know, our waters and our oceans are our breadbaskets. They're the ones that feed our communities, and that's what we use for our cultural purposes, for our potlatches, for our feasts. And nobody at that time and nobody at this time wants to take a chance of any sort of spills. We've had some small bunker spills in our community, bunker fuel spills that have been catastrophic, impacting clam beds and the communities in which they were spilled. So I think it's really important that everybody understand that this has been a long time coming. It's been there for quite some time, and we want to keep it there. It is put there for a reason. And I think the nowadays, when we look at our communities along the coast, we have built a sustainable economy along this coast that's worth millions and millions of dollars. We're very proud of.
Yeah, Christine, that was something I wanted to touch upon. I know that recently we've seen some data come out about where these billions of dollars in terms of GDP and actual, you know, economic stimulus, economic impact that we're seeing in British Columbia, broken down between tourism, oil and gas, electricity, you know, government, education, those types of things. And it looked like tourism was at the top of the list, you know, pushing almost $10 billion a year, much higher than every other sector in the province. Tell me a little about that economy. What has Coastal First Nations done, and what is going on within the Great Bear Rainforest area that would stimulate and allow a lot of these communities to access that tourism economy that you just talked about?
Yeah, sure. There's a tourism sector and an economy in our North Coast. As everybody knows, it's a beautiful place to live, and there's lots of tourism that comes along with that, whether it's from Prince Rupert to Haida Gwaii to Heiltsuk territory. Tourism is a huge economic benefit for our communities, along with the fishing industry. Quite a while ago, there was an agreement that we've done, which was called the Great Bear Rainforest Agreement. And part of the envelope from that agreement had to do with economic development. So there was an investment from the province and from the federal government, along with our communities, that allowed this economic envelope to grow. We've been able to leverage it in ensuring that we're attracting a lot of these economic additional dollars. And we've managed to grow it to, I think it's a $1.4 billion return on an initial investment of $60 million. And that's because there are many pieces, like the tanker ban that's in place. Knowing that that's there, it allowed for that investment to come in. And we're very proud. There's many of our communities that have used these dollars as initial investments into entrepreneurship within their nation. So we're super proud of the communities are doing an excellent and amazing job. And it's a sustainable economy. It's, you know, when we initially did the first Great Bear Rainforest Agreement, it was some of our community members were loggers, some of them were in extractive industries, and they really made that transition to a more sustainable, whether it's a guiding outfit or an Airbnb in Heiltsuk territory or any one of those opportunities. It's really been a game changer in our communities.
Yeah, no doubt. Christine, maybe you could tell us about the Coastal First Nations, the organization. Which nations are included when we talk about Coastal First Nations, and the nations that, as you mentioned, are totally opposed to any sort of oil tanker traffic or export on the North Coast?
Yes, we have 9 communities, and that spans all the way from Haida Gwaii to the North Coast, which includes Metlakatla, Kitkatla, Hartley Bay, Central Coast, which is Bella Bella, Rivers Inlet, which is Wekano, New Hulk territory, and it really, Kitisu Hehe as well. And it's really expanded all the way through the coast. So we have the Haida Gwaii North Coast and the Central Coast that make up Coastal First Nations. And we've been in existence for 20 plus years. It was first developed when we first did the Great Bear Rainforest Agreement was developed. That's how we came about. But that traditional alliance has been there for quite some time within communities. We've always worked together. This sort of just formalized it about 20 years ago.
Christine, the other thing, you know, that was mentioned in the press release, the statement from Coastal First Nations, obviously wanting to support what Premier David Eby has been saying, you know, this whole time, pushing back against Premier Smith's proposal. Currently, there aren't any major companies or pipeline companies that have proposed this. This is the province of Alberta wanting to push this forward. And there were 3 points that were made in the statement that Coastal First Nations put out. And one of them, that the Coastal First Nations support nation-building projects that are built in partnership with First Nations. if there was, you know, a nation that wanted to support this, or a company that was headed up by First Nations, as some might remember, the Eagle Spirit, you know, pipeline was an oil pipeline that was proposed at one point as well on the North Coast. Would it be considered, or is it a total non-starter to see any sort of oil development on the North Coast?
It's a complete non-starter, no matter who the proponent is. It's been very clear, I think, from the numerous consultations that we've had to put this tanker ban in place, and just our community in general. Each of our communities have marine plans that are really thoughtfully developed, and none of those plans include oil. And so it's been an adamant, absolutely not.
Christine, just the last thing for you. You know, you mentioned it earlier. There is a very sensitive ecosystem and territory on the waters on the North and Central Coast. We have seen some diesel spills and bunker fuel spills before that, as you mentioned, have been catastrophic. So it's you know, this is nothing new for those who live along the coast, the sensitivity of the place, but also, you know, the critical habitat and the industries and the livelihoods that are attached to that. What is your message? What's the Coastal First Nations message to, you know, companies or proponents like the Premier of Alberta when it comes to this type of project?
Well, I think it's important to remember that we've had a couple of historic agreements that have allowed for the province and the federal government to be partners along with Indigenous communities, first in the Great Bear Rainforest and now in the Great Bear Sea PFP. And it really talks about how we want to conduct ourselves within our territory. And it really focuses on preservation, especially with the Great Bear Rainforest Agreement, about protection measures. These are really important to our communities. It's really important that we're not only looking in front of us, we're looking at our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren's future. So all of the planning that has happened, it's an investment. It's an investment into a better way of doing things. And we're very proud that the Great Bear Rainforest Agreement has been duplicated. The financial mechanism has been duplicated in 9 different countries around the world. Absolutely, the communities are very proud of that. And so we know we're doing historical work, and that's why the oil tanker and the pipeline that they're proposing doesn't fit within any of the work that we've done, not for ever since we've been taking care of and stewarding our territories, and not in any of the plans that we've done recently that involved the province and the federal government. So when we're talking about these pipelines, it's nowhere in any of those plans. And, you know, when we're talking about our area, it is one of the last remaining coastal temperate rainforests left in the world. That's what we're protecting. That's what we're ensuring is here for the future. And we're in a place now where we have species that are on a downward spiral. And we want to make sure that we are presenting and we're protecting these territories to pass on to our next generations.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com. or check us out on the web at smithersradio.com. CICK News has been made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to my colleague Pam Hassan and all of our roving journalists. I'm Daniel Messick. Thanks for listening.